David Amber, host of Hockey Night in Canada, NHL and Sports and Hockey Central at noon. Your thoughts on whether a boy band can play instruments and whether or not the Backstreet Boys comeback's enveloping your world and your family's world.
Wow. First of all, I was never in a boy band. Secondly, if I was in a boy band, that's a no-brainer. It'd have to be New Edition because they got things started way back when.
Okay.
Backstreet Boys. Yeah, you know what? I can't lie. I liked a few of their songs. Do you guys watch the show Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Yes. Started to.
You know when he did the cold open, I want it that way. You remember? Have you seen that?
I want it that way.
Sing it with some conviction, David. Sing it with some conviction.
We're going carpool karaoke on Hockey Night in Canada next Saturday with Brian Burke. Let's make that happen.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine did a cold open where the convicts are singing I Want It That Way, and it is hilarious. And you've got to see it. If you haven't seen it, just Google it online.
Funnier than the end of There's Something About Mary, where they're all singing Build Me Up Buttercup in the jail and all the convicts are?
It's comparable. But you know what? The Grammys were pretty cool last night. Alicia Keys, well, first of all, it makes you feel really old. I didn't know half the people there. But
heck yeah.
Alicia Keys did that incredible melody, which was very neat.
We were talking about that, and we were also talking about if you had to get rid of one instrument, the piano, drums, or guitar, which one could you do without? And maybe you can weigh in on that conversation, because I was a little bit stumped.
I can't answer that, I have to tell you guys a really cool, quick story here. So Alicia Keys, by the way, the Girl on Fire tour. You remember the whole Girl on Fire thing? So my sister's a journalist in New York, and she sat down with Alicia Keys, and this was, I don't know, 10 years ago. It was a while ago. She used to write for Essence magazine, and she sat down with Alicia Keys and did this whole feature on her. And in the feature, she writes, you know, Alicia Keys, she's so hot, she's a girl on fire. Alicia Keys reads the article, loves it so much, she goes, you know what, I'm going to make a song, Girl on Fire. And that was the inspiration for her song, the tour, the album. Pretty cool.
Wow.
That's pretty something.
Is your sister getting royalties? Right?
That's what I asked her.
Yeah. Take that up with a lawyer. No, that's really cool.
She didn't even know. You know, Alicia Keys basically in an interview, you know, named my sister. Janine Amber wrote this great article about me and it inspired me to write the song. And I thought that is the coolest legacy ever. Yeah.
And she easily became the favorite child after that.
I'm
the failure in the family. I've acknowledged that.
Now, I've never talked to you about the time, the 3 or 4 years that I was writing for Essence magazine, but we'll do that another day. I did some really
stop, really poignant,
really, really groundbreaking stuff. I thought back then.
A lot of op-eds.
I thought you and Burke broke a little news Saturday night. I reacted when you asked him about the Anaheim coaching situation, and he's pretty entrenched knowing those people, and he was basically like, oh, it's quite possible. And 12 hours later, it was more than possible. It happened. Randy Carlyle out. But what he didn't predict was, and how could he, is 65-year-old Bob Murray, never having been a coach at any level, going behind the bench.
Yeah, I think there's something to this. And what I suspect is, well, first of all, Randy Carlyle, I mean, Don Cherry a week before on Coach's Corner said, you know, the team's quit on him, and quite, you know, it looks that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing to be losing games 2-1 in overtime. It's another thing to be walking into every city and being down 4-0 before the first period's over, which was the case, you know, in their last game before he got fired on Saturday against the Flyers. So they had given up for all intents and purposes. And it's not that a new coach is going to inspire this team to make the playoffs, but they clearly had to do something. And I think Bob Murray held on as long as he could with, you know, a dear old friend of his, someone he's had success with in Randy Carlyle. And the fact that Bob Murray's taking over, to me, reads that they didn't necessarily want to thrust a coach into this situation with these players. I think Bob Murray wants to sit there with a keen eye and evaluate who's with us, who's not with us. And I'll get a better sense, and I'll let a coach start with a fresh, you know, clean slate of players come September, come training camp. That's the thought. And, you know, the names have been thrown out there, Dallas Eakins and everyone else. So it'll be interesting to see what they do, but I guess that's behind the timing of it. Let Bob Murray, it's not like, hey, I'm there to get us to the playoffs. I think it's I'm there to really have a closer sense to evaluate, and we'll go from there.
And it's interesting because the move is smart in the sense where it's not like you're putting a supply teacher in to monitor class while the teacher's away, right? You're bringing the principal in. You're bringing the big guns. So foreseeably, it's not going to get any worse in a situation where it has the chance to, if you don't consider this off the rails, just really go off the rails even further.
Yeah, Ashley, I don't see this as an ML Carr situation where Bob Murray's going to say, I'm going to search I'm going to search the world high and low for the best candidate and then come back and say, well, I've decided it's me. So
I don't
see Bob Murray either, next year. But I agree with you. I think it's better. It'll catch, if nothing else, it'll catch the player's attention, and he'll have a keener sense of who should be kept and who needs to go. And it's better than slapping an interim tag on someone you don't expect to be there next season. I mean, what's the point of that? To warm the seat for 3 months. Might as well just wait it out. We're talking 2 months. The season's over in 2 months, which is kind of shocking. And they're buried too deep. They have too many teams to climb. So, John Gibson's been banged up and everything else. I think they're sort of saying, okay, let's hit the reset button officially with a new coach next fall.
David Amber, our guest, Penguins Flyers tonight, by the way, from Philly, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet. They haven't been traveling gritty for the road games. They should, but you'll get him front and center tonight against the Penguins. And speaking of Pittsburgh, I guess I don't think it's Chicago. I don't think there's I don't think it's either the two California teams that are out. But Pittsburgh being in that sort of playoff bubble is super unexpected. They've got a goal differential of plus 17, which tells you they've lost a lot of close games and had some decisive wins. But they could be really nip and tuck with where Carolina is, with where Buffalo is, trying to make a big push. There's no guarantees for these Penguins.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe Jim Rutherford saw this. Remember, he pulled the trigger on a few deals earlier, and everyone said, why is he shaking up, the lineup? This is the Pittsburgh Penguins. They don't know how to win. But it's been nip and tuck in that metropolitan division all season long between the Capitals, the Jackets, the Penguins, the Islanders. And now the Islanders have gone on this incredible run, and they've sort of taken over that first slot. And then Pittsburgh's been in that battle with those other two teams. And we haven't really thought of anyone else in that division. And lo and behold, Carolina's making a little bit of a run now, and Philadelphia's making a huge run now, maybe too little too late. But bottom line, you're right. Pittsburgh's in a battle with the Hurricanes and with the Flyers for that last, for right now, collectively, that fourth spot in the last wild card in that division. So it's interesting. I'm wondering what else is up his sleeve. Jim Rutherford's always made a habit of making these big deals and solidifying the team ahead of the trade deadline. But I'm not sure what other chips he has to play. They made the Hagelin deal. They traded Sprong. They traded Oleksiak. He's done a lot. They traded Brassard, Sheehan. Like, they've done quite a bit. I think he might have, unloaded the gun, as they say. And I'm not sure what else there is to do. You never... Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Phil Kessel, Chris Letang, you never bet against that group. But, what's funny and interesting here is imagine a Pittsburgh-Tampa Bay first-round matchup. My goodness, that would be sensational, and that's what we could be staring down.
Well, I was going to say, all the giddiness from you guys are brothers and sisters at Hockey Night, but the Leafs-Canadians, I think that would that be tempered by an Islanders-Hurricanes first round? Like, that series has Jim Houston and Craig Simpson written all over it. That's,
yeah, they're the boy band.
I'm sending those guys to Raleigh matchup and Brooklyn for that series. That's got to get wall-to-wall coverage.
Yeah, we don't need Carolina in the playoffs. But, listen. The Leafs aren't locked in at second either, and I don't want this to happen. But Boston's a point behind them. Montreal's just 2 points behind them. There is the legitimate concern that the Leafs slip to fourth, and I'm not even sure if it's a concern or not. It might be an easier road to plow. Imagine if the Leafs slip to fourth, they slip to a wild card, and they could be staring down the Islanders. Lou Lamoriello versus Kyle Dubas, head to head. Uncle Leo's back. Matt Martin's back. John Tavares against his former team. I mean, the storylines there would be sensational. And then the Leafs could continue, if they beat the Islanders, would continue through that division, which conceivably you avoid Boston, you avoid Tampa, till the conference final. It's no easy road. You got to go through Washington, probably the defending cup champs, and conceivably through Pittsburgh. So it would be interesting either way, but that's another storyline that hasn't really been touched on yet.
By the way, before you go, Dirk in Oakville notes on text, I went to high school with David. He should have been in a boy band. So I can't tell if he's one of your best friends or mortal enemies, Dirk in Oakville. Does that ring a bell?
I remember Dirk. How you doing, Dirk? Yeah, I did like to sing. I'm not very good at it.
It must be for the moves and not the vocals, but there's room in boy bands for people that can just break it down in a choreography segment.
I went to Jarvis Collegiate, and I'm trying to think. Okay, you guys ever see the movie Meatballs?
Yes. No. And I knew those answers were coming.
Yeah, I actually wasn't born yet. The little kid, the kid who played Rudy in Meatballs, went to Jarvis Collegiate. Chris Makepeace.
That's right, Chris May, and he was in My Bodyguard. Everybody should see My Bodyguard. With Matt Dillon as a tough guy. Yeah. Oh, boy. Our program director loves when you and I get into movies and television shows between 1979 and 1982. He's a massive fan.
We need
a separate podcast just for that demographic. Enjoy the rest of your morning. Thanks for this.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun, and thanks for having me on, guys.